This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Yeah, that's the sound that makes us ask for a breath mint for Office fans. Good morning, everybody. 1 week from today, we'll know who we got, and we may not know, actually, if they decide to trade back into the second round. I'm going to give you, very shortly, three players who I'd be surprised if Washington took in the first round. Next week, on Monday and Tuesday, we'll get into the players that I hope they take. Max is here with me. We've got two guests on the show today. Tarik El-Bashir will be on with us in about 20 minutes to talk about the Caps playoff matchup against Montreal. Game one's not until Monday. I thought all of the game ones were going to be scheduled for either Saturday or Sunday. That's an NBA thing. Actually, the latest game one comes on Tuesday night, so they really are spreading out the initial game ones of the NHL playoffs. The Caps will play Monday night in game one at home against Montreal. Tarik El-Bashir will join us in about 20 minutes. My friend Joe House from The Ringer at 11 to talk NFL draft, NBA playoffs, and a lot more. So, a week from today, if we assume Washington did make a pick in the first round at number 29 overall, and if we take a consensus of, like, you know, the mock draft availables at 29, you know, players that if you have followed enough of the pre-draft conversation, a lot of these players have either been mocked to Washington or they're available for Washington at number 29. I have a list of players, three of them, in fact, that, after doing a little bit of homework and a little bit of watching and reading, but watching a lot over the last two nights really, there are three players that I think I would be surprised if they took at number 29. And I'll start with, I'd be surprised if Washington takes James Pierce Jr., edge rusher, Tennessee. Starting with, he's got red flags all over him, especially from a work ethic standpoint. There are a lot of people that want to be assured, and maybe Washington has been assured, but there is too much smoke around James Pierce Jr., the edge rusher from Tennessee, with respect to work ethic and, by the way, a couple of incidents related to traffic charges. Nothing significant. Speeding, driving on a suspended license, failure to provide insurance information, you know, all young people stuff. But really, the issue has been missed off-season workouts at Tennessee, occasionally showed up late, and there's just a question as to whether or not James Pierce Jr. loves football. So number one is, we know this organization is looking for a continuation of building upon the culture that they started to create last year. 7 of their 9 draft choices last year were team captains, were guys that were squeaky clean to a certain degree. I don't see them taking a flyer on James Pierce Jr. at the end of the first round with a first round pick. By the way, he could be gone before 29, or he could be one of those guys that drops into the second round because of these concerns. You know, he is a legitimate athlete and one of those kind of longer athletes. And he has the ability at 6'5", 245, you know, ran 4.47. This is a guy that's tall, athletic, you know, has the long arms, the angular kind of a build that you see in some of those edge rushers in today's game. Got, you know, real twitch, ability to bend, ability with multiple moves to rush the passer. I think that he's fine in the run game. I don't know that he's great as an edge setter. But I'll tell you what, to be great as an edge setter in the run game, you got to be willing to study. You got to be willing to work. James Pierce Jr., no doubt, is a first-round, early second-round talent as an edge rusher. I just have crossed him off the list because everything you read about Pierce Jr., everything, is that NFL GMs need to be assured that this guy's work ethic will be NFL caliber, will be professional at the next level. I just don't see Washington messing around with that at all. By the way, I'm not including this player on the list of 3 players that I'd be surprised if they took in the first round because I don't think there's any chance that he makes it to them because his talent is obscene, and that's Mike Green, the pass rusher from Marshall. There's some, you know, issues with him as well. You know, sexual assault allegations from when he was at UVA. But I don't see him getting there, so I didn't include him on this short list of players that I'd be surprised if Washington took. Because I'm including, really, I'm looking at a list of the players that, from a consensus standpoint, in most mocks, might be there. And have, by the way, in some cases, been mocked to Washington. James Pierce Jr., I don't see Washington taking at number 29. Number 2 on my list of I'd be surprised if they took him. This is going to be a surprise to some of you, and it was a surprise to me after last night I spent a lot of time looking at the running backs. I'd be surprised if they took Omarion Hampton out of North Carolina at number 29. It's possible he's gone too, but he's not in Ashton Gentry's class. I've decided that Hampton's really nice, but he's more in the mix with all of the other backs that I think start to come off the board on night 2 based on their ability. I like Hampton. I just don't see him as a first-round pick at running back. I've said this before, but if you're going to take a running back in the first round, you have to be sure that you're getting somebody of the caliber of the elite backs in the league, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, etc. I like Hampton. I think there's a chance he'll be a solid starting pro running back, but I don't see him as an elite running back at the next level, worthy of taking because of the position in the first round. If Washington were going to take a first-round running back that isn't Ashton Gentry, I'll give you 1 or 2 that I'd feel better about than Omarion Hampton. But to be honest with you, I don't feel great about any of them after Gentry. Gentry is all-world talent and has a chance to be an elite back in the NFL. You know, running backs end up becoming elite taken after the first round. But just in looking at Hampton right now, to me, he's not a first-round running back, that position, At other positions, you would consider taking him at number 29 overall. But I'm not taking a running back that I don't see as elite. Part of what makes me concerned about Hampton, I love his size. I love his power. I love his motor. I don't think he's got the greatest of vision. I don't think he really has breakaway kind of football speed. I know he ran, I think, 4.45 at the combine. I don't think he pass blocks particularly well. I spent a little bit of time of looking at the backs that I liked before really looking at him last night. I think that he doesn't have enough wiggle, runs a little bit upright. I just don't see elite here with Hampton. I see very good, but don't see elite with Hampton. I do with Genty. God, man, Genty is going to be really good. I've mentioned this guy's name many times before because I just kind of fell in love with the player when he was at Oregon State. But to me, I don't see much difference between Hampton and Damian Martinez from Miami. And Martinez is definitely climbing boards. I've seen him mocked, you know, night two, second round, as high as second round. It's also possible that he's still around on day three because, like Hampton, he isn't necessarily a stellar pass blocker at this point. You know, you see that with a lot of young backs coming out. They're just not there yet because, really, at the college level, they've been asked to carry the freight, guys like Hampton in particular. I mean, he had some unbelievable football games last year. And if you go back and you look at some of the games that he had great games against, they weren't against stellar defensive teams necessarily. Wake Forest, as an example, was probably his best game. He rushed for 244 yards. He had a game early in the season against Minnesota, very early in the season. Minnesota pretty good defensively in the Big Ten. He averaged 4.3 yards per carry. He rushed for 129. Took him 30 carries to get there. There wasn't a lot of great defense necessarily in the ACC. You know, you saw that like with the Miami-Georgia Tech game, the Miami-Louisville game when Miami was fighting for a playoff spot. There just wasn't great defense across the board. Carolina played in a game this year against JMU. The final score was 70-50. North Carolina hasn't had a good defense in college football for years. They gave up 70 to JMU in that game, by the way. Hampton did rush for 139 yards on 19 carries, 7.3 yards, but they had to start throwing the football a bunch in that game. So I'd be surprised if they took Hampton at number 29. I like the player. I just don't think he is someone worthy of taking with a first-round pick in a draft that is heavy in running back talent. And I don't see a lot of separation between him and some of the other backs after Genty. Like, I see Damian Martinez right there with Hampton. By the way, in stature, in size, in style, I think Henderson's got much more breakaway, big game, big play potential. I like Caleb Johnson a lot from Iowa. So I'd be surprised if they took Omarion Hampton from North Carolina at number 29. And then lastly, and this is a player that I really like a lot too, but I would be surprised if they took Luther Burden III, wide receiver from Missouri, at number 29 overall. He has been one of my favorite players to watch in college football the last couple of years. He is truly, you know, special in creating space and then with the ball in his hands after the catch. I like everything about him watching him on the field. But one of the things in sort of doing a bunch more research on the players, and I do remember this being a bit of an issue. He's got a bit of a temper. He's gotten for things on the field, lost his cool multiple times. He has an issue occasionally with taking plays off. If the play isn't coming to him, he looks a bit like he's lacking in wanting to participate. Who does that remind you of? And by the way, there are a lot of similarities in style of play. Jahan Dotson, who they begged during last offseason and during training camp to play it out, to hustle. You know, we talked about this last year when they let Dotson go, even before trading Dotson and moving on from him. You heard Dan Quinn saying, we got to see him play every play out. They want dive on the floor hustlers. It's who they want. And I don't think that's Luther Burden, for them anyway. I love the player in terms of the talent. I think he is going to be a really good receiver, probably more inside than outside. But I think the concern over a guy like Luther Burden is he going to play it out every play? Is he going to dive on the floor for every loose ball? It's not what Jahan Dotson was. They saw that in him. That's not what they wanted out of their wide receivers. They also want their wide receivers to block. It's not necessarily Luther Burden's favorite thing. You know, he is more of an Olé blocker. Like, hey, let me just kind of shade you in this one direction. I don't see them taking Luther Burden the third. Three players that have all been mocked to Washington or have all been mocked in the general area of Washington at 29. I don't see James Pierce Jr. being selected by Washington. I don't see Omarion Hampton being selected by Washington. And I don't see Luther Burden the third being selected by Washington. I think all three players are extraordinarily talented. I think Hampton's going to be a good NFL back. I do. But I don't see him being in the same category of high-level, top-five kind of a back. I see Ashton Jeanty that way. And I see Hampton closer to some of the backs that you could get on night two or even day three. And when I say that, I think he is going to go long before some of those backs because I do think his talent level is, you know, worst case, you know, day two. But I don't think Washington's going to take him at 29. I don't. Luther Burden and James Pierce Jr. just have issues that don't fit with the kind of people and players effort-wise that they were looking for last year and that I think they'll be looking for this year. Just my guess. Week from today, we'll know. I mean, there's a chance that they trade back. And by the way, there are other players that I think will be a concern, you know, for them at number one. But those were the three that really stood out from three position groups that are possible for Washington at number 29 overall. Like, Egbuka, to me, is somebody they'd probably want. Different overall, I think, overall in the, for the lack of a better description, intangible set than a Luther Burden. But, yeah, and at this point, to me, I think the running back that deserves to go in the first round is Ashton Jeanty. And after that, I don't see a first-round back unless somebody really falls in love with Trayvon Henderson and his game-breaking and play-breaking ability. But I don't see it as a first-round pick. Pierce Jr., talent, no doubt, but clearly, I mean, out of the players in the first round, at the edge spot in particular, Mike Green and James Pierce Jr. have the biggest red flags going into this. Green is a better player, a more productive player, and I think will be a better pro than Pierce Jr. And Pierce Jr., you do have to wonder, you know, just where the actual fit is from an all-down standpoint. He's got the body type, though, that teams seem to be looking for in edge rushers in this day and age. Max, let's get to a what do you got, if you'll hit that sounder. So tonight is the final night of the NBA play-in round. The Heat and the Hawks at 7, the Mavs and the Grizzlies at 9:30. The reason I'm bringing it up is I had somebody reach out to me to say I was wrong about the Memphis draft choice that the Wizards have. And the person who reached out to me, and I couldn't find your tweet, sorry, but you were correct. I did not know that it was a protected pick. So if you're a Wizards fan and you'd like them to have a second first-round pick in June, in addition to wherever their own pick falls after the draft lottery, then you really want Memphis to win tonight against Dallas. If they win, they're in the playoffs, and the Wizards will get the Grizzlies' first-round pick. If they lose, they're not in the postseason, and they've got a top 14 protected pick, which means the picks will come in the form of second-round picks down the road. So if you didn't think you had a rooting interest in tonight's game, if you're a Wizards fan, you do. Root for Memphis to beat Dallas tonight in the play-in game. They would then be the 8 seed, and they would face Oklahoma City in the first round of the postseason. And the Wizards would snag their first-round pick, which would come, I think, at 19 or 20, right around there. All right? Root for Memphis tonight. They're 6.5-point favorites. I was actually surprised by that. I thought the way Dallas played the other night and with John Morant and the effort that Memphis gave on Tuesday night in that game at Golden State, and John Morant rolled his ankle and it looked pretty bad, I actually thought the line would be shorter than 6.5. But clearly the odds makers kind of like Memphis to win this game, and that, again, would be good for the Wizards. All right, up next, Tariq El-Bashir will jump on with me. The Caps now know their first-round playoff opponent. They finished up the regular season last night as well. We'll talk some Caps hockey with our friend Tariq El-Bashir when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and theteam980.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crime-ity.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
No stick for Poulin. Slicing through, Poulin got it. Ovechkin scores!
897. That's where he ends 2024-2025, the all-time leading goal scorer. 2 goals since the record setter against the Islanders about 11 days ago. And he finishes with 897, so next year we'll get the beginning of the season to be about the chase for 900. Joining us right now is Tariq El-Bashir. Tariq's done a phenomenal job covering our hockey team in this town for a long time. He does it now as the insider for Monumental Sportsnet. You can follow Tariq on X, on Twitter, at Tariq_El-Bashir. So will we start next year with the chase for 900? Will that be a big deal?
Well, the man said a couple of days ago that he's not retiring.
Right.
Not that anyone expected that. He's got another year on his contract, so absolutely. It was funny. I was talking to some other members of the media last night on a text thread, and we were all taking guesses at where he might finish his NHL career, and we're all pretty bullish. We were all saying 925, 930, 935. Look, Alex, at 39 and a half years old, scored 43 goals this season, and he missed 16 with a broken leg. He's got a lot of hockey left in him, and he's as competitive as anyone I've ever met. I got to imagine that now he's broken Gretzky's record, he wants to put just enough space between him and anyone else, so you know the Austin Matthews and the Leon Draisaitls of the world don't ever have a chance of catching him.
If he had played the entire season, would he have led the league? I did not do the math. I think he finished 8 goals behind Draisaitl for the overall goal scoring. I think I think he may have ended up leading the league in goals, right?
Yeah, Kevin, I think you're right. That was another part of our discussion last night. If he didn't miss those 16 games, because remember those 16 games came at a time where he was scoring at an incredible clip, at probably the best clip of his entire career, 20 years in. He scored goals 14 and 15 in that game and then suffered the broken leg. So, like, he was on his way to a hat trick in that game at Utah. So, I absolutely think he would have led the league in scoring. And it really is amazing. And I don't know if you were able to catch last night's game, but watching Sidney Crosby score and then watch Alex Ovechkin respond with a goal a little bit later. I mean, how lucky are we for 20 years here in D.C. to have watched the greatest goal scorer of all time, but also his primary nemesis has also been at just an equally high level over these 20 years. It just really, when I saw that last night, I was like, I cannot believe we are still 2 decades in watching these guys trade goals. Unbelievable.
You know what's really interesting about that? And I didn't know this until recently because I don't follow the sport like you do. But this is the 3rd straight year Pittsburgh has missed the playoffs altogether. Yeah. What's wrong with their organization?
Yeah, they doubled down on veterans and at a time where they should have been doing what the Capitals were doing, which was, and I know it's easy to say this in retrospect, but you need youth, you need young blood, you need young legs, you need speed, you need hunger, you need desire. You have to have a good mix of young players who are hungry and want to prove themselves and veteran guys who have been there and they know what it looks like and how to get there and they can show the young guys the way. And they don't have a great mix. They skew way too veteran and don't have enough on the young high-end talent side. And you know, their general manager has made some bad signings and that's put them in cap hell. I really don't know, and I don't know what the answer is for them, but I'll tell you this, I feel bad for Sidney Crosby because he's too good a hockey player to not be in the playoffs competing for a Stanley Cup. Now, I know he made up for that on the front end of his career when he won 3 and played for 4, but it really is a shame to watch a talent like him. He had 90 points again, and he's not going to be in the playoffs. That's bad for hockey, that's bad for the NHL, it's bad for Sidney. Bad for the Capitals rivalry. The world is better when the teams that have the biggest followings, and the Penguins are one of them, the hockey world is better when those teams are doing well. And this year, not so good, Kevin. The Penguins missed, the Rangers missed, the Bruins missed. I mean, a lot of the teams that have Chicago missed again, that's not good.
So, you know, I've asked you this before, but now that he's at 897 and he broke the record, you know, I think most of you guys have always said that when both of their careers are over, Crosby and Ovechkin, that Crosby will be ranked higher on a list of the greatest players to ever play the game. Do you still feel that way?
You know, I don't feel that way anymore because of what Alex achieved this year. I mean, breaking that record was not just, you know, a big record in the hockey world. I mean, that was a big record in the sports world. I mean, they're both going to go down as top 5 to 10 players in the entire history of hockey. You know, I think critics would say Ovi was more one-dimensional, has been more one-dimensional in his career, but that's really a product of the position he plays, right? He's a winger. He's a goal-scoring winger. He's not a center. He doesn't take face-offs. He doesn't necessarily drive play. He doesn't have the same responsibilities in the defensive zone. They just play different positions, and so it's always been hard for me to compare because it's not really apples to apples. It's not apples to oranges either. It's not exactly a straight comparison. So, and the one other thing I would say about Sidney is all the championships. I mean, Alex won one, Sid won three and played for four. I mean, that's a big difference. But I think if Obi were on a three-way call with us, he would go, but he had all those other number one draft picks with him.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I think Sid had a little more help along the way, particularly early in his career. You know, he had Evgeny Malkin. You know, he had Marc-Andre Fleury. He had Chris Letang. Now, Ovi eventually got those supporting stars around him, but I feel like Crosby had those right away.
So before we get to the matchup against Montreal and how you see it, and by the way, just how in general the odds makers see the Caps heading into this postseason overall, which is, you know, they're not very bullish. But I think I had Ted on a week ago, week and a half ago, something like that. And we were talking about sort of the need for a second cup. The pressure, you know, was off Ovi in 2018. Kind of, I compared it, by the way, Tark, to Rory at the Masters. Like, they had been carrying around this incredible weight of expectations that had been unrealized, and you just saw it in their reactions. Ovi in Game 5 in Vegas in 2018, Rory Sunday at Augusta. But anyway, it's now been 7 years since that cup, and Washington hasn't even won a playoff series. They've been ousted in the first round every year they've been in the playoffs since the cup. Has that pressure to go deep into the postseason kind of rebuilt itself upon his shoulders?
I don't know if it's the same pressure that he had before he won in 2018, but I know he feels pressure again now, particularly with how well the team did this year. You know, he desperately wants to win another championship before he retires. You know, he has achieved two massive accomplishments, right? He won a championship, and he passed Wayne Gretzky. His legacy is secure in this game. That said, you put a second cup 7 years after you won the other with a totally different roster. The only guys left, Kevin, are Ovi, Wilson, Carlson, and Lars Eller, who came back. If Ovi were to win another championship with a totally different cast of characters, I think that would catapult him into a different stratosphere. And I know, you know, he desperately wanted to pass Gretzky. I mean, that's a really big deal for him. That was a really big accomplishment, an incredible feat. That said, he wants to win, too, and I do feel like they are under a little bit of pressure right now because of how good their regular season went, because of the talent that has been assembled around them. What I would also say is the way this team is built, almost everyone is under contract for next year too. So it's kind of like a 2-year window in my mind. I mean, you want to do it right now, right? It's not like they can go, oh, we always have next year. They want to do it right now. But that said, this team is going to look almost exactly the same next year, with a couple of new players, younger players entering the fray. Like I said, that's a long-winded way of saying I do feel like the pressure has been building, but I feel like this year the pressure got a lot higher, or is a lot higher going into the postseason, simply because they were so good in the regular season. I mean, remember, there was a time 6 weeks ago when we thought the Caps might beat Winnipeg out for the President's Trophy.
Right.
They might actually get the number one overall seed. And then they kind of became Ovi-focused, and rightfully so. I mean, they wanted to get their captain to the a record that we never thought was going to be broken. And so they kind of changed the way they operated a little bit to get him there. And then they clinched the playoffs on, what, March 20th. And so then they're kind of like playing out the string, but you know, that's probably the wrong way to put it. You know, like teams that aren't going to make the playoffs are playing out the string, but for the Capitals, they're just waiting for the fun part from March 20th on. So I feel like they maybe let their foot off the gas a little bit. And in this league, and in almost any pro league at the top of a sport, if you let off 5%, 10% in terms of focus or mental preparation for a game or execution, you're going to get beat by your opponent. I mean, there's just not that big a gap between the Capitals and the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, there just isn't. And so if you're 5 to 10% down in any one of those categories on any given night, you can get embarrassed in this league. And that happened a little bit too often to them down the stretch. I do feel like this team is veteran enough still and has good enough leadership and you know, tutelage from Spencer Carberry, who's probably going to be coach of the year. They're going to be able to find that switch, that proverbial switch, and flip it. But you'd rather go into the playoffs playing the way Montreal is playing rather than the way the Caps are playing. But, I mean, there are so many extenuating circumstances. There are players being rested. There are some injuries. But I guess that's a way of saying the Caps better take care of business games one and two at home, because Montreal is young and fast and probably just naive enough to not be scared of the moment.
I think your answer, which you were, you know, trying to kind of wrestle with what would happen if they don't perform well in the postseason, is the answer. Because, you know, a first-round exit would be disastrous. It really would be based on the regular season that they had and recent history. Like, I'm not saying that they have to win a cup this year for his legacy to be where everybody wants it to be. Obviously, a second cup with him at the age that he is, you know, 7 years after the first one, is with, as you said, basically a whole new, you know, group, would be super impressive. But the downside of getting beat in the first round for the ninth time in his career, that they have to avoid that. Have to, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It'd be pretty embarrassing and humbling if they were to lose in the first round to Montreal. I mean, and you know, Montreal is essentially the Capitals from last year. I mean, they got in on the last day. They had to win their last game to get in. They are the 16th seed. The Capitals are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Like, on paper, the Capitals are better offensively, they're better defensively, they got better goaltending, they're better on special teams, they're better in the intangibles like experience and depth and coaching. Like, they check all of the boxes. It'd be a huge upset if they were to lose.
I think they ended up with the exact same record, too, or the exact number of points, I thought I read, too, from as the Caps did last year.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, like the Caps, they also were playing their best hockey down the stretch. And so that's what makes them dangerous. And that's why, you know, I think the Caps can't afford to think that they can go into this series and kind of feel their way into these playoffs. They are playing a young team, like I said, is probably just naive enough to not be scared of the moment, because they weren't supposed to be here. Like, their plan was to make the playoffs like next year or the year after. They're playing with house money. I hate that cliche, but it's true. They are here a year, maybe 2 years ahead of schedule. And so, and more importantly, they're playing well right now. 7-1-2 in their last 10 games.
You're worried about this.
Sure. Their goaltender's one of the best goalies during that stretch.
Is he Halak?
He's not Halak. But any goalie can lock in and be really good for a week and a half.
Right.
That said, I'll go back to what I said about a minute ago. The Caps are better in every conceivable category. They just have to play up to their standard. They have to play up to their potential. If they play up to their potential, this is a 5 or 6 game series. If they don't, oh my God. Here we go again. So, yeah, we'll see.
We're talking to Tarik El-Bashir. All right, we'll get to the specifics of what they have to do to win this first round series against Montreal. But why do you think the odds makers are, you know, less than optimistic about the Caps' ability to go on deep into the postseason. They're the fourth pick in most spots in the Eastern Conference, and they're like the eighth pick overall to win the Cup. Why is that?
Yeah, it's funny. The Caps always are a little disrespected by national media, by national pundits, by the analytics crowd. I think there are a number of reasons for that, and I think you outlined it just a couple of minutes ago when you said they've had a lot of first-round exits, right? They've had a lot of they had that one magical year in 18. Short of that, they've had a lot of disappointment, and not just during the Obi era, but even going back further than that. I think that works against them. I think that the way they score goals, and they scored a lot of goals this year. They were one of the best offensive teams. They rely on just having better hockey players than other teams. It's not necessarily that they're, barrage of scoring chances. They have guys who can snipe. And I think the analytics crowd, their numbers can't explain that adequately. And they don't have, and this is weird to say about a team that has Alex Ovechkin, but they don't have Dreisaitl and McDavid at the top of the ticket. They don't have Kucherov and Point. They have, in my opinion, and this is why, Kevin, I'm more bullish on most people about the Capitals, because the delta between their top guys and their bottom guys isn't very big. And in the playoffs, that makes you really dangerous, because in the playoffs, you're not just, during the regular season, you play on Sunday afternoon, then you got a game on Tuesday with some travel mixed in. Yeah, you're preparing for Tuesday's opponent, but you're not really drilling down on that opponent. You're more worried about, okay, let's worry about how we're playing. And oh, by the way, guys, here's what they run on the power play. Here's how they kill penalties. Let's focus on doing our process right. In the playoffs, you are like, here are the lines we think we're going to see. When things don't go well, here are the lines that Carberry then mixes things up to, and here's how we're going to shut these guys down. They really drill down on every little detail of your team game and even your personnel. And when you don't have three or four guys, okay, we shut those guys down, we're good. With the Capitals, okay, you shut down Carlson, you got Chychrun. You shut down Ovi and you got Strom. You shut down Strom and Pierre-Luc Dubois might get you. There's a lot of really good hockey players, and I feel like because they don't have those three or four guys you can just focus on just shutting those guys down, okay, we'll be okay, I think that's going to make them quite dangerous. For me, the big question mark is going to be goaltending. Charlie Lindgren is really good. Logan Thompson was a Vezina Trophy candidate until he got dinged up down the stretch. I don't really know what's up with him. I know he's been on the ice quite a bit here the last week, but I don't know if he's going to be ready to go. And what worked for this team, goaltending-wise, was that rotation, was having that internal competition, but also just keeping guys fresh. They obviously can't do that or aren't going to be able to do that if we don't know what Logan's status is going to be. So that's a little bit of a concern for me. But I would say they're off today. By tomorrow, we'll probably get a much clearer picture of what Logan's status is going to be going into game one on Monday night. If he's still kind of skating on his own after practice, then okay, well, maybe he's not going to be ready. But I think if he starts to join his teammates and start doing some more stuff, then okay, well, all right, now we might be back to being pretty solid in goal.
All right. You've outlined some of the concerns and some of the things that you like. How do they beat? Biggest takeaway if they win will be what? Biggest takeaway if they lose will be what? And then give me your prediction.
Yeah. Okay. I would say the biggest thing for the Capitals to win would be to be true to themselves, the way they played this season, which is scoring a lot of goals, playing tough man-to-man D, and getting good enough goaltending. It worked for them all year. The pucks weren't going in the way they had would have hoped, or it had been happening early in the year, the last 2 to 3 weeks. I expect that to change once they realize these are games they have to win. They can really dial in and like I said, bring that 5-10% focus, intensity, mental prep, you know, whatever was lacking there while they were just kind of coasting. They can dial that back up. I think they win this series in 5-6 games. Where they will get into trouble, Kevin, is if they lose a game at home and then have to go on the road to Montreal, which is a big, loud, scary place.
And they'll be fired up. They haven't been in the postseason for
a while,
right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, during the COVID year, they made a run to the final, but that was the COVID year. I mean, when that building is full up with 22,000 fans and they're singing their soccer-like chants, and I mean, they know every single thing that's happening on the ice, and they react to every single thing that's happening on the ice. It's an intimidating place to play. If the Caps win both games at home and then go up there, okay, all right, they're going to figure this out and they're going to win the series. If it's 1-1 going up there, man, it's going to start getting a little tight on them. So I just think big picture, Kevin, I think that the Capitals would be well served by not being overconfident here, but they should also have a little bit of confidence knowing that they are the better team in every single category and should win this series, should be able to find a way to win this series. And, you know, this is meandering a little bit here, but another thing that's been impressive about the Capitals, and I think this also might serve them well in addition to the depth of the team that I mentioned a few minutes ago, is they can win in all sorts of different ways. They can grind them out. They can outscore you. They can shut you down. However you want to play, the Capitals can figure it out. You just hope they can get out of their own way and do what they did from October to about early March or mid-March, and I think they'll be okay.
Well, you said to me many years ago, the postseason, you can basically describe it in one word, goalie. So we'll see how the goaltenders perform, and hopefully the Caps are healthy there. Thanks, Tark, very much, as always.
Anytime, Kevin.
Tark El-Bashir, everybody. A former athlete in town is still playing, which is surprising, but also got bit by something. That story next.
All right, last night, the Nats, well, yesterday, actually, the Nats lost 1-0. Trevor Williams got the start, pitched five innings, gave up five strikeouts, and gave up one long bomb to O'Neill Cruz. They will take on the Rockies tonight at 8:40 on 106.7 The Fan. The Caps closed out the regular season last night, lost 5-3 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Clay Stevenson got his first NHL start and saved 33 of 38 shots. After 38 years, Lee Corso has announced his retirement from broadcasting. He will give his final headgear pick on August 30th. And the NBA play-in continues tonight. The Heat will take on the Hawks at 7, and the Mavs will take on the Grizzlies at 9:30. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1. Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream. Turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
If you've been thinking about new windows, my recommendation is Window Nation. Window Nation has a great deal going on right now. For every four windows purchased, you get four free with no money down, no payments, and no interest for two full years. So by the time you start paying for your windows, you're paying half price, and the year will be 2027. If you buy a house full of windows, they'll give you a free entry door. That's a free entry door if you buy a house full of windows. Window Nation has a 96% customer satisfaction rating, over 20,000 five-star reviews. They do it right. Their customer service is first rate. They'll give you a lifetime warranty on those windows. And it all starts with a fast, free in-home estimate by calling them at 866-90-NATION or heading to windownation.com. Mention my name. I promise you they'll take really good care of you. The other night, as in Wednesday night, Patrick Corbin, remember him after five seasons post-World Series, had a near 6 ERA, was 33-70 for the Nats from 2020 through last season. Well, he signed a $1.1 million deal in Texas, and he pitched really well the other night in a 3-1 win over the Angels. Went 5 1/3, pitched very well, but it was dicey that he was going to pitch at all going into the evening because he got bit by something and had a totally swollen ankle. They still haven't figured out what bit him, but the culprit of the swollen ankle was determined to be venom. There was a visible bite mark on his foot. The ankle was wrapped, and he went out and pitched anyway and pitched well. Maybe that was the secret. Is we needed him on one ankle for the last 5 years. They did not say what bit him. I would imagine it was a spider. Typically, if there's a visible bite mark and they're talking about venom, it was some sort of spider. I guess it could have been a snake. He pitched well, though, in his second start this year in Texas. And currently, after the start the other night, his ERA is 3.86. And he is 1-1. Actually, he's 1-0. There was a non-decision in his first game. When we come back, Joe House from The Ringer will jump on with us. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com.